in the Persian Gulf by U.S. Marines. I also carry knives or manufacture knives that are carried by undercover police officers. I also make pocket knives that are used to clean the dirt from underneath your fingernails.
Do you think it'd be unwise if we screened the purchasers of your knives?
Yes, because look in your kitchen drawer. In France, they outlawed stilettos after King Henry VIII was killed with a kitchen knife. The end result was stilettos became the number one weapon of choice of criminals in France. They got to the point where they were cutting the hands off of cutlers who were so poor that they bowed down to the criminals' money to make that knife. To this day, stilettos are illegal in France, and it has had absolutely no effect on their use in crime. We have a perfect opportunity here to create a way to identify the criminals and a way to identify the law-abiding citizens. But at the same time, you got to find a way to do it to where it doesn't, like other people have mentioned, stomped all over the law-abiding citizens' rights.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. You. Is there a Bill Montgomery in the room?
Where's the registry portion of this that says you can't keep records?
Oh, it's not very long. It needs to be worked on, but it's back here.
Chairman Calhoun and members of the subcommittee, I'm Bill Montgomery. I live at number 12 Portland Rowing Club, Portland, Oregon. I'd like to first observe you people really make your money. Congratulations. The spirit and intent and the safeguards of this proposed bill, if they remain intact, make it, in my opinion, a good piece of legislation. By shifting the responsibility of this emotional issue to the gun possessor and away from an inanimate object. The re-enfranchising of the responsible gun owner to carry concealed weapons, a privilege that has been largely taken away from him, is an important part of this bill. I have no trouble with a 15 or 45 day waiting period if it would help enforce some of the laws we have on the books or impliedly should be done now. I think it's a great idea. I don't see why it should take another 10 days, but if that's what it takes to do it, we need to clean the whole area up. I have several concerns, however. I got all kinds of qualifications, but I'm not going to take my 3 minutes to tell you what they are. You can meet me later if you want to know. If the spirit, intent, and safeguards of this bill are maintained, and through political and legislative monkey shines to which I am not privy, it's not watered down, that's fine. If the thing is watered down and changed badly, I think you break faith with all of us, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Question.
Yeah.
Watered down which way?
Hmm?
Watered down which way?
Take away, for instance, the concealed weapons permit program because the gun control man felt it was naughty. And
excuse me, I might point out, Representative Clark, Mr. Montgomery is testifying in favor of the bill.
I understand that, but
yeah,
one person's water is another person's wine.
We know who's carrying the water, Representative Clark.
That's an inside joke.
Thank you.
I am concerned that specifically Representative Clark, there are a lot of groups and people who have said this is a compromise bill, including you. And a lot of people are compromising from a more stringent side of saying let's get rid of guns altogether. I've seen that agenda often. I am against that. I hope this bill is not watered down by the rights that are left to the gun owners and the rights that are insured and hopefully strengthened. One of them would be concealed weapons carry.
Thank you. That's
by encroachment from that side. The second concern I have is the demonstrated inability of the county level to handle approval of concealed weapons permits. If you wire into this a path for preemptory challenge or cancellation or rejection, by at a county level, I think you're going to have a problem in delivering that concealed weapons activity. I hope it is not just a bait put out there and not have 13 or 8 or whatever it is in Multnomah County still after that's all over. I am concerned about the gun collectors, being a minor gun collector myself, and I don't know how they feel about it. I wonder if a special gun collector licensing item of some kind, as separate from a or a lesser test and the concealed weapons permit thing, might make life easier for them. Maybe they'd say that's restrictive too. It's something I'd suggest you look into. My last concern, I'm not too worried about anymore now that the Dowd crowd is on the scene, because I think they're going to help you trace down the track of anything that they feel would be inequitable or what you might call passive felonies or things of that nature. And most of you being attorneys, which kind of scares me a little bit in principle, but most of you will be able to be helped by the Dowd crowd to follow these destructive tracks to their end and hopefully plug them so that the spirit and intent of this can be handled as needed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Montgomery. Thank you. Is there a Gareth Ward?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I have a question for Mr. Montgomery.
Sorry, Gareth.
You know the difference between a dead lawyer in the road and a dead snake in the road?
Yeah, a dead lawyer and what?
And a dead snake in the road?
Skid marks.
Skid marks in front of the snake.
That's consulting attorney.
Thank you,
Chairman.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I take this opportunity to thank you for this opportunity to mention my views, most of which have already been expressed by those that have preceded me.
If you could please just state your name and for the record, so we.
For the record, my name is Gareth Ward. I represent a loose collection of antique rifle shooters in the Corvallis Philomath area. As I said, most of my objections to House Bill 3470 have been covered by those that preceded me, and if you would, you could add my voice to theirs. I would add just one more thing, that it's always, for 40-some years, it's appeared strange to me that efforts to control criminals have appeared in the form of legislation against an inanimate object, a firearm. Now, the first time that I heard that you could control criminals by controlling firearms, I kicked the slats out of my crib. I was brought up to believe you committed a crime, you paid for it. Since I returned from Vietnam to Oregon, I find that the institutional policies of Oregon are deinstitutionalization. We are returning the mentally ill and the criminal offender to the streets of their hometowns or wherever. And the only sanctions that are laid upon them at that time is restitution and probation and the payment of probation fees. And many times these people commit further crimes. Criminals by definition do not, and I repeat, they do not obey the law. So any law or legislation that is evolved in an attempt to control criminals by controlling their weapons is doomed to failure. I recommend that we may as well or be better served by putting the system on trial and doing what we can in terms of utilizing our manpower and our financial resources in the upgrading of our court systems, our criminal justice system, and our prisons.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Mannix.
We're working on that, believe me. We're working on that. The problem that we have is we're not playing the game of controlling criminals. We're trying to identify law-abiding citizens and separate them from criminals, knowing that right now there's a lot of those criminals loose out there. That's the balance we're trying to achieve here.
But laws are enforced against the law-abiding, not against the criminal, in my view.
Okay.
I have a question. Mr. Ward, which county do you live in right now?
Benton County.
Do you have a concealed weapon permit?
No, I do not. Okay. At the present time.
I have,
in the past.
When I said before, and I think this is the major bargaining chip that's in there for, that's a pro-gun aspect for the gun people, in Clackamas and Multnomah County, I think there's less than 10 concealed weapon permits in each one of those counties. So what that means is that a law-abiding citizen, because the sheriffs won't issue the permits, is unable to legally carry a concealed firearm to defend themselves. Do you see, or do you think that there's a lot of merit in having a provision like that that requires that sheriff to give permits to law-abiding citizens in those counties?
In terms of if there has to be a law, yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there Stephen Bach?
Gentlemen, thank you very much. My name is Stephen Bach. I live in Multnomah County, and I'm here on my own. I do have a very extensive firearms collection, and I am testifying because I'm extremely interested. I have prepared a document, which you have, and I wish my copy machine was a little more clear. Most of my comments were technical when they started with, but I do want to start off and thank you very much for the time that you put in. And I want to really thank the pro-gun people who put a tremendous amount of their time in the earlier part of this year. It's extremely important to understand, as some of the other people have said, that the compromises they're dealing with, and frequently many of the things that they have to say, is because they were facing panic legislation. So when they feel that they have to support something that's a compromise, it's because of panic legislation. Now, I also want to state that I'm, for non-felons, fully in favor of citizen individual rights, pro-gun, pro-preemption, pro-concealed weapons, anti-crime, and anti-government abuse of discretionary power. By the way, it happens to be Washington County, not Clackamas County, that has the extremely reduced number of items. I set out in the document some of the things that I think that we have to address in this, and I want to summarize it fairly quickly. With reference to records, it shouldn't just be that it's unlawful. That means that we can sue them. And that means that they can go to court after court after court, polling judges illegally before we get there and appeal.
Excuse me, what did you just say?
It shouldn't just be unlawful on the records.
Illegally?
There's an opinion on the part of many of the firearms people that assignment of cases, especially at the appellate level, sometimes has a little pre-screening of judges.
Go ahead.
In other words, who's going to give the opinion favorable to some of the political powers? I would suggest that you have absolutely no hammer on records keeping unless, in addition to being unlawful, which means you can sue them civilly and collect damages, and in Chicago, by the way, it was $500,000 for denial of concealed weapons permit, which was later overturned in a judge selection scheme, that it should also be a criminal penalty for the keeping of records, and it should be amended to state specifically that it is not just the states of police or any local law enforcement, but absolutely any other agency of the state and any political subdivision thereof, and that's very easy to put in.
May I inquire?
Yes,
please. I'm welcome to questions anytime.
I just have to get the chairman's permission. That's how we keep order.
You have mine.
Thank you. I assume that the main thrust of the concern about the record keeping is, let's face it, let's put it bluntly, our whole constitutional system is based on the idea that someday, if our government lost its democratic base and became tyrannical, we want to have an opportunity to oppose those tyrants and to protect our freedoms. And that if the government's keeping records as to which among us have firearms, they'll know where to go to collect them when it comes time for them to put down the insurrection. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, with understanding that has already occurred in this country.
In many places, but not in Oregon.
It occurred, for example, in Chicago. It occurred during the 1968 race riots, when they went around to specifically black owners, because, by the way, the records say what's your race, they went around to black owners of firearms in a racist fashion, and of the good firearms owners took their weapons away.
So, all right, now what I'm trying to pick up from that is we citizens want to make sure that we're in a position to protect our freedoms in some
against internal enemies.
Right. Carrying from that, though, we also want as citizens to have some opportunity to make sure that those among us who have forfeited their rights or are incapable of those rights, mentally ill and felons come to mind, that we can identify them and control them. Are you comfortable with the idea of trying to ferret out those who are seeking to have weapons who are felons? And as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of it as far as possession of a weapon. And the mentally ill and that sort of thing.
Let me offer that you're talking about censorship. You're talking about action before the fact.
No. I'm talking about people who judged mentally ill.
No. I understand what you're saying. I have to also offer that I have had, in addition to collecting normal weapons, I also collect the exotics, which are covered under National Firearms Act of 1934. And as the result of that, personally, the largest single file of intelligence on anybody in the northern three populous counties is on me. I mean, the people who make the bomb triggers at precision cast parts for the nuclear weapons don't have files my size. Now, I'm very concerned.
That doesn't mean you're a felon.
No, but, okay. You know, it's right in there with everyone else. I am extremely concerned, and my point of view is this, that there are tremendous numbers of laws now, and all of us who are out here want to have the laws that are here enforced. We want to see the felons, when they're arrested, when they have weapons, we want to see them thrown away. So if that's the section that I'm talking about, that's one small section of this area of having penalties for the criminal misuse of firearms. Before the fact, I seriously object to having to make standard citizens go through
penalties is that you therefore later cannot carry a firearm, and how do I prevent that person from going into a store 20 years from now and getting a firearm?
I've already been through a situation whereby 2.5 weeks ago in Portland, when I was in a gun store, when the police were called, when a man who had $20,000 in his pocket in the morning paid a $7,500 bond to get out.
You're giving me an anecdote. I don't think you can answer that question other than by saying I've got to have a way of identifying whether someone has a criminal history.
If someone has a criminal history,
they shouldn't be able to get guns.
But understand, and maybe the study that's in this, because I got a sneaking suspicion that the study may show something. And by the way, as soon as you ask, it may be self-fulfilling. Because the self-fulfilling aspect of it is, if they're going to take fingerprints, there may not be anybody at all. But if I could get on. I understand. I just have serious problems with this.
Thank you.
Okay. By the way, if the French didn't keep records on their weapons, the Nazis wouldn't have been able to pick them up so easily. With reference to permits to carry or with purchases, there's a requirement for documentation of origin. If you're going to take fingerprints, Representative Mannix, if you're going to take fingerprints, documentation of origin is useless in the extreme. Fingerprints, which are what are required for NFA transfers nationally, don't have any such requirement, and there hasn't been an abuse in 55 years with any of the exotic weapons covered under NFA transfers. With reference to the mental health provisions, please understand that this is one thing other people have not mentioned. There's a tremendous opportunity for abuse of this. Has anybody here ever had a divorce? If you've had a divorce, all types of things get created in divorce, in the heat of conflict. And in such a situation, there is an open prescription for blackmail on the part of someone who wants to support their right to keep and bear arms, because we're empowering mental health professionals, including ministers or anyone else who functions in a counselor format, who may have an agenda to send in someone to a prohibited list, This is a real problem that in the fullest needs to be examined and if not massively rewritten, at least thrown out. There's an element of cost. With reference to paying $50 for a concealed weapons permit, if there is going to be a cost element like that, there should without question be something that will permit those people who don't have the $50 to have it waived. Flatly a waiver.
Absolutely.
In section 7.7, subsection 7, it was mentioned earlier about knives. If you wish to regulate knife, concealed weapon, carrying knives in a concealed fashion, then all you have to do is change the language such that if they have a concealed weapons permit, then the knives are okay too. If they don't have a concealed weapons permit, then the knives aren't okay. That's very easily taken care of. So if the switchblade's a problem, which in the state of Oregon right now you can keep and have switchblades and it's gone through the state Supreme Court, then what you should do is change that language and it's to read any person who carries concealed without benefit of a valid concealed weapons permit is then committing a crime. With reference to the powers granted discretionarily to sheriffs to not issue, Washington County, Multnomah County have a severe problem. There is a court case right now working its way through the Circuit Court of Appeals in which the attorney in that case has had federal NFA weapons transferred. But the sheriff in the county who signed his NFA papers would not sign for the concealed weapons permit. So there's a little bit of duality. The problem is, they say this is modeled after the law in the state of Washington. It starts to, but there's a hammer in the state of Washington if they don't issue. And if the reason that the sheriff puts down for not issuing doesn't stand up, the sheriff goes to jail. There needs to be a criminal hammer. We need to have, thank you very much for the time, we need to have those things tied down. If I, just one more second.
Please go ahead.
We don't want status offenses. People have said that over and over again. It's almost as if somebody gets wired for a status offense, there has to be some type of ombudsman that a reasonable individual could appeal to in which that would waive the fact that it's a crime. Not grand jury proceedings, not any of the rest of it. If somebody's caught in an inadvertent situation where the whole weight of massive government is coming down on their head and they're not a bad guy, status offenses should be waived. If they are a bad guy, let's lock them up forever. Any questions or anything? I'd be glad to talk to you.
I have just one quick one about
thank you.
I think the hammer's a good idea, but I wonder if you think it might be difficult to get law enforcement to prosecute one of their own if they had determined or decided not to get somebody.
You mean if only because they go into court and lie now?
Well,
Mr. Chair,
Representative
just
Clark,
to follow up on that, the more testimony I hear, the more encouraged I am actually that there are. So a lot of the things that people are raising are concerns that I had when I read through the bill the first time. And I think that there are some things we can do to strengthen the bill in places where it needs to be strengthened, like this area. Mandatory attorney fee awards, if someone has to appeal a denial of a request, so that the law enforcement jurisdiction at issue has to pay your lawyer fees if you have to go appeal. Some things that will hit people in the pocketbooks and maybe even be more effective than a threatened criminal prosecution of a law enforcement officer is hitting them in their budget.
Yeah.
I think there are lots of things that can be done to tighten the bill up in ways that people, there are some consistent themes. I guess all I'm saying is there are some consistent themes that we are hearing, and I think there are some ways we can
final thing. We have not adequately stated, because this has been a specific issue, we've not adequately stated that not necessarily law-abiding, but very patriotic firearms owners are a major component of the strength of this nation. And lest we forget, the British would have been in a deep pile in 1940 after Dunkirk if the law-abiding citizens of this country had not donated some 10,000 firearms to rearm the British Home Guard. And it came from us. And the people who form the National, we are the National Guard.
We are the unorganized militia.
We are the unorganized militia, and by golly, we need to jealously guard that in the most important possible ways. And there are some things that I promised some people, maybe I wouldn't bring it up, but I'm going to have to bring it up. And there is one other section with reference to firearms items. You may want to, as well, sweeten the pot. And sweetening the pot for the firearms people would be to include for those people who pass the state requirement for proper concealed weapons permit, that those individuals, in addition to the knife situation, If they're involved because they don't want to make a whole bunch of noise and they don't want to disturb everyone else and they have some type of exotic weapon covered under 1934 NFA Act. I know this has been brought up by the other people in committee and drafting and it wasn't put in. I do want to make sure that you at least consider the opportunity, again, that if under federal statutes the signature of local law enforcement is required and all he's supposed to say is whether you're a bad guy or not, if you get a concealed weapons permit, aren't we saying that he's not a bad guy? Aren't we saying that he's an ally in law enforcement?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Maddox.
I'm noticing we do have a lot of people on that witness list.
Yeah.
And I'd suggest that perhaps we could have three people come up at a time to express their concerns and then try to so that folks who have traveled here will have a chance to express their point of view without too unduly cutting on their time, but maybe say groups of three come up for 3 minutes at a time and I promise to not ask questions.
I hate to have people on opposing sides of each other's throats up here at the panel.
How about three fours and three against?
We can try to do.
Can you include some money in this bill for, you know, keeping the bad guys with guns in jail so they don't get out?
We have other bills to do that.
We're doing that. We were going to talk to Representative Burton about getting having a prison cited by June of this session.
Rodney's Bureau.
The I would agree with that as a prison site. The one thing I want to tell you is if you have specific comments about and you want to come in and try to help us work on the legislation, I appreciated your written comments because those are helpful. And when we get to work session, which could be next Wednesday or could be the following meeting, if you want to get in on specific sections, it's important to get some written testimony to us. And if you're able to be here, that'll be helpful also.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, let's try that. We'll try to call three people that are for this. Let's go with Rod Harder. And we will also go with, if anybody has any particular objections to being with somebody else that's also up here, let me know and we'll get you off. But in case we get into a question and answer session, this might help speed it along. Fred Lur. And Bill Schillig.
I'd like to pass the next Wednesday if I may be allowed to, if you have a work session.
Sure. If are you going to have some specific comments or?
Next Wednesday?
Yeah.
What time?
It'll be 1:30 next Wednesday, the next hearing. Yes. Do we have written comments from you?
No.
No, not this room?
I think we're back upstairs.
I think we're back up in hearing room 357, which is up on the third floor.
Very appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. if you have anything specific, something in writing, just saying this section would be real helpful.
By the way, you don't have to come next Wednesday if you want to mail that information into the Judiciary Committee, and then we'll have it to read so you can save a trip if you need. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Thank you, Representative Maddox. Let's go with two for now. Please go ahead, Mr. Harder.
Chairman Calhoun, representatives, for record, my name is Rod Harder. I'm the Northwest Regional Organizer for Fertakers of America and the State Director, Oregon State Director for National Trappers Association. And believe me when I tell you, I represent some of the reddest necks in Oregon. We've discussed this bill at great length, and we feel that House Bill 3470 treads a very thin line between social and political expediency and a serious infringement on our Second Amendment rights. Changing social outlooks, failure of our criminal justice system, and media hysteria have created a climate where this type of legislation could be made into law and would never have been considered a few years ago. It's a long and detailed, comprehensive bill, and we all know that we're going to have to work on it at some length. For a number of years, our national organizations have told us that people kill people and the guns don't. In the first time in my memory, this is the first time some members of our legislature have ever admitted to that. And I think this bill addresses that fact. We're addressing criminal activities, and I think for the first time admitting that we have to go after the individual and not after the gun, and I approve of that. With regards to the one-year study, I have reservations that this is de facto registration. I know that the serial numbers have been eliminated, but the people's names have not been. And in this day and age of electronic collection, I have some reservations that at the end of that 12-month period, we're going to be able to get rid of all that. I'm not real sure, and I don't have any answers, Representative Maddox, as to how to do that. I wish I did, but it is a concern. We're in support of the concealed weapons portion of the bill, and while we believe it leaves too much discretion to the sheriffs, we feel like the issuing, or too much discretion to the issuing authorities, we feel that statewide uniformity, multi-weapon authority, and elimination of waiting periods for permit holders make it one of the strong selling points in the bill, and probably the reason that our chapters support the bill. That's, if we had to pick any one thing, that would be it. Because I represent a sportsman's organization, I would like the record to show that our ability to carry weapons concealed while hunting, fishing, and target shooting, and while en route to and from those activities, will not be affected by this legislation and will be retained in current law. As I stated at the beginning of this testimony, this is a very delicately balanced bill. The organizations which I represent support the bill in its present form. However, any further restrictive amendments would cause us to back away from that stand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harder. Mr. Lehrer.
Lehrer. Excuse me. That's fine. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Fred Lehrer. I reside in Southwest Portland, Multnomah County. I appreciate the opportunity extended me today to testify in support of House Bill 3470. This is the first time I've ever testified before a legislative panel. I'm doing so today because I believe the legislation is important to me.
And George Pace. And Jeff Osterman. And Jeff Osterman. Okay, and we haven't forgotten about Jeff Osterman yet. Okay. You can join the table here. We've got to restart the clock. Mr. Sweeney.
I'm John Sweeney. I'm the president of the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. And as the president, I've been hearing about all of the work that was going into this thing. And not to drag this out, because I'm really short spoken anyway. And we'd certainly like to see this passed out to the House with a due pass recommendation. And I'm certainly glad I don't have your job either. And thank you.
Quick question. Now, granted, this is a balanced package dealing with current concepts. Are you open to perhaps at least studying some of these alternative ideas over the next couple of years to see if we could do something more proactive rather than reactive in terms of gun ownership?
Yes. Basically, if we could help the law-abiding citizens, everything possible, and if we can stomp the criminal, everything possible.
You're going to help us with that prison construction, right?
You betcha.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Ed Murphy?
For the record, my name is Ed Murphy. I live in Marion County and resident of Kaiser, the city of Kaiser. I wish to commend the people assembled here on this side of the room, what's left of them, for exercising their right to participate in the process of government. And I also want to commend the sponsors and the legislators for, on this particular piece of legislation, not bending to the hysteria that was evidenced in California when a Mr. Vandekamp held up an assault rifle and indicated to the crowd that was assembled there that he could have killed everyone in the building. I am a private citizen. I don't represent anybody else but myself. However, I am a member of two of the organizations that were represented here, both on the national level and the local. As a citizen and as a concerned citizen, I felt that this legislation, when I originally arrived here, I was completely against it. Subsequent to that, I talked with Mr. Judy of the NRA, other members, other people I know locally throughout the state of Oregon, and members of what we'll call the gun lobby, although I consider myself a member of the most important lobby, and that's the citizen lobby. That's just an ordinary citizen, and I tend to object being called part of a single-issue lobby, because my interests are varied, as your interests are varied, and this is just but one of them. There's a great deal of emotional feelings about this particular issue. There is also a large number of reservations about any part of legislation that has to do with gun ownership, especially in the state of Oregon. It appears, the number of hours I've been sitting here and listening to testimony, that many groups are represented. However, the individual firearm owner is not represented other than speaking for themselves. I would strongly suggest during the work session that the board en masse identify people who are what we will call pro-firearm ownership and invite them to be participants in the cut and slash routines that happen during the final work sessions before a bill goes before the full legislature. These individual owners will not necessarily go the way of their leadership or their membership organizations, but they will... Hello. Possibly I'm going too long in time and going on and on. I can guarantee you this, that many of the people who are here earlier and the people who are still left feel strongly about the issue, and they want to participate. Some of the people I talked to in Eastern and Southern Oregon could not be here because of the travel constraints. Those people would want to participate too. This is not an issue that's identified only to a specific county or area of the state. Now, earlier, one of the members mentioned that Mr. Purdy did a rather heinous crime down in California. That's evidence from everything we can see in the paper. As I understand it, that particular individual used a false piece of identification to obtain the rifle here in Oregon. I don't know if this legislation will prevent that in the future, somebody obtaining a false identification. Why, going through, or yeah, even the thumbprint. Now, I've sent over fingerprints to Oregon State Police, and it takes quite a long time to get those back. I don't know if they have the technical capabilities of doing them rather quickly.
Well, I think that's why we're a 15-day idea, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there are some other ideas.
Yeah, good. No, I just
and speaking of Purdy, had there been a situation down there near that schoolyard, whether it had been one of you or one of us that had been present that had a firearm, even one that maybe wasn't carried legally, they could have intervened and stopped that particular individual from doing that crime. That touched the hearts of all U.S. citizens, all Americans, when it involves children. That involves me. That's one of the things I can't watch on TV, any kind of a movie that involves hurting children. Adults, not so bad, but...
Okay. One other thought for, may I?
Yes, sir.
Just for your consideration and for the consideration of others, there are alternatives too. Banks somehow seem to know how to check people's IDs when they want to use those teller machines, because not only do they have magnetic strips, but you have a personal code.
Pin.
If you're smart, you keep that code. And they don't lose very much money out of those machines because they have an economic interest in having a good solid system. Another alternative is to have a card with a computer strip that you apply for, and you know what your code is. You walk into the gun store or to the swap meet or whatever. And, of course, that requires some sort of phone communication, but that'll check whether or not your card is still good or if you... I'm just throwing that out as something to think about.
There's a lot of... Okay.
Excuse me, Mr.
Yes.
Murphy,
yes,
I have
sir.
To ask you to just wrap up in about
okay, well,
a few seconds if there's a...
All right, I have two questions possibly the board could answer for me. The first question is rather simple. Who is stable enough to own a firearm? The reason I ask that is I've lived here a number of years in Salem, and I was in Lancaster Mall when a police officer who was not on duty walked up and shot his pregnant girlfriend in the head and then walked out. My family was with me. Mm-hmm. Now, had I been closer to that proximity, I might have done something about it, but it would have been after the fact. The second occurrence is I was right across the street here when a former Oregon State police officer...
I think we agree that
yeah.
You can't predict stability totally. That's
okay.
A given.
Very quickly, the last question. I was told by Mr. Judy from the NRA that this piece of legislation will repeal a number of sections of the ORIS that will make it no problem for collectors such as myself to go to a particular gun show or a meeting organization and to collect among ourselves. Is that true? Is there a guarantee on that? Or is that...
Yes. So far, so good.
Yeah. So far, so good. Because a number of the organizations here weren't... Yeah.
Those portions of the current law are indicated as being deleted.
So As such, collector shows will continue in the state of Oregon. Guaranteed.
Yep, this law does not affect, negatively affect that.
Well, thank you very much, then.
Thank you. Are you Mr. Ostrom?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Mr. Ostrom, do we have, someone said you had signed up. I don't have it on these sheets, so I'd have to ask you to, for your address, or do we already have
it? No, he doesn't. Just state it for the record. I don't have it.
Just state it for the record, please, because we don't have it on the sign-up sheet.
Who my name, what my name is and what
so we got your, yes, please.
Yeah, my name's Jeff Ostrom. I'm a citizen of Lake Oswego, and just a private gun owner. Did you want my address?
For the record.
No.
For the record, please. We're not singling you out. We have the others who have signed up, as always.
Right. Mount Jefferson Terrace, Lake Oswego.
Thank you.
First off, I'd like to thank you folks for your time, and I would think it would have been nicer if possibly Speaker Katz and some of her constituents had stuck around this afternoon to see what some of the people...
Because we work over the bill.
I know.
She can just watch from now on. We're the ones in charge of this bill now.
I understand, sir. I understand. But I still think it would have been appropriate that maybe she had stuck around to hear what some of the people of Oregon had to say regarding this, and I see that she didn't. But I don't think the law-abiding citizens should have to compromise any of their constitutional rights. And compromise has been a word that's been passed around quite a bit in here today. And maybe individuals as yourself and whatnot don't have a problem with that. But myself and other individuals in here do. We don't feel as though we should have to compromise those rights. We're law-abiding citizens and tax-paying, hard-working citizens. No law-abiding citizen wants to be fingerprinted like some common criminal, okay, to go and purchase a firearm for sporting purposes. The person that proposed this legislation doesn't even own a gun. And that's like letting a non-driver make the driving laws. You know, it's ridiculous. We spent a lot of time here today, your people's time, my time, taxpayers' dollars, figuring out ways to keep, to further restrict the personal freedoms of law-abiding gun owners, rather than figuring out ways to keep the criminals behind bars, which is, you know, which will put an end to this. Patrick Purdy could have come up here and bought the weapon that he bought, had this 3470 gone through anyway. He didn't buy a handgun, he bought a sporting rifle or whatever. I just feel it's a real crime to the people of this state to have this type of legislation be passed and to have them fingerprinted. I think that's a real slap in the face to law-abiding, hard-working people. That's basically all I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I believe that concludes the hearing. The hearing will be closed and continued to next Wednesday, April 26th at 1:30 p.m. Thank you all for participating. Yes.
Okay. Do we have a committee address thing here?
Yeah, here we go.